Talk Business with Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, BCCI. Welcome as we hear the perspectives of various subject matter experts and stay up to date on the challenges and solutions around emerging and current trends in business, policies, trade, and more. Welcome to this discussion, part three. Full free movement of CARICOM nationals, the opportunities and challenges for businesses in Barbados. Last week, you would have heard part two in our chat with Mr. Paul Innes, president of the BCCI, David Commission, Barbados's ambassador to CARICOM, and Gladys Young, assistant general counsel, CARICOM secretariat. You're now invited to listen to the continuation of that discussion.
Absolutely, absolutely. So then how can free movement help address specific skills gaps in Barbados? The ambassador mentioned skills gaps earlier. And what role should businesses play in attracting and integrating skilled workers from across the region? How does that work?
Yeah, so I think let's start first by trying to understand what skills are available in the Caribbean. Barbados actually started within the recent past, developing a skill or establishing a skills bank, which is something from a chamber perspective, from the time I became the chamber president, that was one of the first things I wanted to know. Do we have a skills bank? I went to the University of the West Indies. Can you help us understand what skills are available? And then there's an exercise to be done in the business sector around what skills are we looking for? Not necessarily what skills we need now, but what skills do we expect to be in need in the next 3-5 as we evolve as a digital ecosystem, right? So I think we need to get that in place, because for me that is fundamental in terms of helping us understand what steps the business community should take. Now, one of the steps we should take is we should get involved. So we shouldn't just ask the question. We should be partnering and collaborating, I would say, start with the Ministry of Education to help inform the curriculum that is required to develop and build out the skills that are required. That is one. The other one would be get involved in speaking and engaging to the young minds of those students, that is from primary, secondary, and tertiary. We can also look to bring the younger, and it is something that we're contemplating. How do we influence the next generation? And I think like chambers can actually start engagement forums and bring young students into the business arena. One could be through job attachments and internships, and I'm not talking about the summer programs that some companies do. I'm talking about sustainable programs where maybe once you get into university and college, part of your development at university is an attachment to the area of interest that you have, right? And that could be 3 months, 6 months. But we need to figure that out, and there are conversations being had around how we can actually make that a reality. I am pretty passionate about that, because I think that's the only way we'll be able to build up or skill set within the region. And as people move, then we get a really nice mix. But UWE is the right place for that, because if you go to UWE, you will see that the population there, the student population there, is a very rich mix of Caribbean people.
Yes.
So through that, you then can get the spur of business ideas, joint venture opportunities emanating therefrom. It also will inform and make a richer cross-border industry in terms of opportunities to merge, opportunities to acquire. And it really helps with how we strategically invest in partnerships across the various markets to ensure that our people maximize the benefits with regard to the free movement of people.
Absolutely. Now, you alluded to it earlier. But beyond staffing, what broader opportunities do you see for businesses such as trade, investments, and cross-border partnerships? And what steps should the business community take to really maximize on these benefits?
So I think, and as you said, outside of, so people tend to think that maximizing or taking advantage of free movement is only around remuneration. More and more we're learning in business that the opportunities is more than remuneration. And people are looking to live, I would say, a particular quality of life, right? And they will move to where they think they can find that. And if Barbados is the place, and I can say to the CARICOM representative here and the ambassador that within the last 3 to 4 weeks since the announcements, I've had Caribbean people engaging with me to try and understand, what opportunities are available in Barbados. I think we'll see more of that. But as we look beyond staffing, we're going to need to engage in, I would say, cross-border business initiatives. So I'll give you a very good example. I was in St. Lucia 2 weeks ago, and I met up with the Chamber of Commerce there, the president and the executive director. And we spent about 2 weeks discussing business opportunities in St. Lucia, but then we got into Barbados. And out of that conversation, we then thought that there should be a conversation at the chamber level between the business sector in Barbados and the business sector in St. Lucia. Though St. Lucia is not part of the initial implementation of the free movement of people, we need to do similar, say, in St. Vincent, in Belize, in Dominica. And then what that will then do is to allow the business community to focus on building those regional relationships. We can then have cross-border partnerships that then allow us to figure out where are the investment opportunities, where are the partnership opportunities. One of the things that I like is where we have pools, talent pools, that can probably do aspects of work probably more efficient. And I know they use better, but I would say more efficient than where it probably is currently being done, right? So when I look across the EC, there are opportunities in the EC and where we can actually move. We can move operations or parts of our operations because it is done more efficiently and effectively within that jurisdiction. So I think from beyond staffing, there are some really interesting opportunities for businesses as it relates to trade and investment and cross-border partnerships.
Indeed. Thank you. Thank you so much. We can definitely maximize on these. I'm going to now turn to the lady in the group, Miss Gladys Young. CARICOM Secretariat, Miss Gladys Young, what are the key policy frameworks and support systems in place to help CARICOM nationals move, work, and settle smoothly in other member states from the Secretariat's perspective?
Yes, and I say thank you for that question. And it really follows from what was being said before, because those opportunities exist now. CARICOM nationals can move for economic purposes, and all of those rights are set out under Chapter 3 of the revised treaty, but I should say, and subsequent decisions of the conference. And they can move for economic purposes. Both for an indefinite period in terms of business establishment and skilled nationals, as Ambassador would have alluded to earlier, and also on a temporary basis as temporary service providers. And the regimes, to get into all of the detail, would be a little difficult for this conversation, but certainly even those opportunities that Mr. Innes was speaking about can be taken advantage of now within the CARICOM single market and economy, at least as it relates to those countries in CARICOM that are participating in the CARICOM single market and economy. And the movement in terms of the establishment, both establishment of business as well as the temporary service provider, can be both in terms of the individual, the natural person, the individual CARICOM national, as well as the CARICOM national, if that the business, if that business meets the definitions that have been set out as to what is a CARICOM national. And you know that is, it gets into this whole threshold in terms of percentage, 50% owned and controlled by CARICOM national, CARICOM citizens then, or citizens of a member state would be the better way to say it. So that opportunity already exists in terms of the movement. I would also want to speak of the fact that in addition to moving to provide the service, CARICOM nationals can move to consume a service, and also on a definite period of time. It would not be indefinite. So the only ones that would have indefinite entry would be those who are skilled nationals and those who are establishing businesses or moving under the business establishment. And the business establishment and the temporary service provider, if it's a business, can move their personnel. In the case of a business that is establishing in another country, they can move their managerial, technical, and supervisory staff under the framework. And in the case of a temporary service provider, they can move their services personnel. And of course, those persons, anyone who is moving under these regimes in terms of skills establishment, once you meet the categories of skilled national, right of establishment and service provider, then you would not need a work permit to work in the country. The skilled national would require a skills certificate, and there are competent authorities in the member states to issue those. In the case of Barbados, that is the Barbados Accreditation Council. And also in terms of establishment and services, it would be the ministry responsible for energy and business. And once what one of the things that is important to note is that there are companies already in Barbados that have taken advantage of the regimes that have been set out in the treaty to move personnel back and forth between the businesses in the different territories. I can think of a couple of examples, and I don't know if we have time to necessarily go into those, but the fact is that there are companies that have taken advantage of the regimes.
Well, if you could give one
Anyone else?
example.
Okay, one or two examples. Republic Bank and Guardsmen are two that I can think of that have used the establishment regime. In terms of the other area, so I've spoken about movement for economic purposes, but we also have, as Ambassador would have spoken to the court's interpretation, the court decision, Shanique Myrie, which was basically looking at a decision of the conference that had been taken to further the goal of free movement, of full free movement in the treaty. There is a goal in the treaty under Article 45 that speaks to a goal of full free movement. The conference in 2008 would have said that all CARICOM nationals can have a right of entry and a definite stay of 6 months for any, you know, any purpose in terms of whether you're traveling for work, for to visit, you know, as a tourist, however you want to look at it, the CARICOM national could move, even if the person just as I said, to move temporarily, but that would not be a movement for economic purposes. So that person would not be allowed to work without, well, without that person would not be able to work unless they meet one of the regimes under the treaty or the work permit regime in the member state. So that decision would have said all CARICOM nationals have the right to enter and stay for a definite period of 6 months. Member states have a right to refuse entry if that person is undesirable or a charge on the public funds, or likely to be a charge on the public funds. And the court's interpretation of undesirable is that the person would have to be a genuine, present, and sufficiently serious threat to a fundamental interest of the society, and gave examples of what that could be. Then in terms of the court would have also given some guidance in relation to the charge on the public funds. And in terms of the framework that has been set out, the conference would have then agreed on procedures that can be that would guide member states where they do feel that a CARICOM national meets one of those criteria and has to be refused entry. And those agreed procedures are were those were agreed in 20 somewhere in 2015, 2017, and member states have an obligation to use those procedures if they are refused an entry to ensure that they satisfy due process requirements and give CARICOM nationals the rights that they are to be accorded. Additionally, and I think Ambassador then would have also clearly stated the further movement that is going to be taking place as it relates to four CARICOM countries, so that the in furtherance of that same goal of full free movement in Article 45, there's a new chapter in the treaty that allows for enhanced cooperation. And that new chapter is being provisionally applied, and that has allowed the conference to authorize Barbados, Belize, Dominica, and St. Vincent and the Grenadines to now go to full free movement, and has set out the parameters. That decision would have also set out the parameters in terms of what those countries have agreed are basic rights that are to be accorded to the CARICOM nationals, including the right to public primary and public secondary, to access public primary and public secondary education, as well as
Yes.
emergency healthcare and primary healthcare, within the means of the country, and it's also on the terms and condition the terms that nationals have, because there are principles in the revised treaty that speak to this, that speak to national treatment, where you should really, as it relates to the rights in the treaty, not additional rights, but as it relates to rights set out in the treaty or in decisions of the conference, you should exercise, or member states should ensure that those rights are accorded in the same way that a national would benefit from those rights. That is a sort of broad underpinning of it. But that would sort of at least give a glean in terms of the framework that we have, where we have movement for economic purposes, general facilitation of travel, and then you have full free movement among four countries.
Well, given everything that is involved, we know that there would be some challenges. What challenges have been identified so far in implementing free movement, and how is the Secretariat working with member states like Barbados to address these challenges?
Well, the CARICOM single market and economy doesn't have full free movement yet. So, in terms of challenges identified in implementing, I take it you mean challenges identified in implementing free movement generally that
Yes.
have been experienced. Okay. So, there have been challenges that we have had, and we would have started this, as Ambassador would have said, the in terms of the skills regime that started actually in 1996, 97, thereabout, predated the revised Treaty of Chagaramas. And then, of course, in relation to establishment and services, they would have started in terms of provisional application from around 2002, 2003, but then definitively from 2006. And of course, you would have created, we would have created the frameworks in terms of, as I said, you have the competent authorities to issue the regimes. We would have set up what would be known as free movement committees that some member states would have set up and would have been far and wide. We would have had the various frameworks set up. And of course, some of those would have been set up without really knowing what the impact would be, so that there would have been various requirements that we have since had to review and see how best we can simplify those requirements to ensure that the administrative measures that member states are taking and even and the legislation to back it up, but the administrative measures are not measures that would be burdensome for CARICOM nationals. And so there have been some of those. And of course, with everything, there may be some teething pains. Harmonization. So remember, we're dealing with the member states that have their own governments. And so as much as we seek to harmonize, every member state is sovereign. And we have one territory, but the member states are have their own systems in place. And so sometimes harmonization can be challenging. And what we would have is that we would have at the level of the community organs, whether it's a conference of heads of government, the Council for Trade and Economic Development, or the Council for Human and Social Development, there would have been procedures agreed and requirements agreed in terms of qualifications, for example, that are agreed that should be applied among the member states. And what you found then is that sometimes there are additional requirements that may be put in by a member state that was not part of the agreed procedure. So that sometimes makes it challenging for nationals trying to establish. When we first started the skills regime in particular, every country was issuing a skill certificate. So you would have some CARICOM nationals that might have three skill certificates from three different countries. We have managed to address that in that there have been decisions, subsequent decisions of the conference that have required recognition of the skill certificate issued by the member state. They have allowed member states to still take measures to verify the skill certificate issued, but that verification is supposed to be checking with the competent authority. So the checks are to be made with the competent authority. And we have had challenges where some people try to, beat the system. And so, but those are not the majority. The majority are persons who have used the system legitimately. And then, of course, we have not necessarily had as many skilled nationals as we would have wanted, using the system. Sometimes you might find that persons would still use a work permit system. So part of that is that not a lot of people are not necessarily aware of their rights and what these regimes are. So there are times where we have had to go into businesses and explain that they can actually move their personnel without a work permit, without the requirement for a skill certificate, because they have that right to move their to move CARICOM nationals who are managerial, technical, and supervisory staff, or if they're temporarily providing a service, to temporarily provide that service without the need for a work permit. So those are things in terms of the understanding of the rights. Then there are times where CARICOM nationals won't necessarily use the systems available in terms of the complaint system, the complaints mechanism that is available and accessible to at least alert that there has been a challenge. There are challenges in terms of data. That is something in terms of how many are moving and in terms of the submission of that data. But the fact is that the data that we have does not indicate that we have had significant movement in terms of within the region of persons moving and staying. They've been persons in terms of skilled nationals getting indefinite stay, yes, and it's businesses and temporary service providers. And there are challenges in terms of especially the data for temporary services, because that is not collected as we would like it to be. And then of course, I should have also spoken to the fact that we do have other regimes like the CARICOM agreement on Social Security, and there and which allows for pensions, the portability of pensions. And there have been challenges in terms of how that is totalized and calculated, but those challenges do not outweigh the benefits that we have experienced in these regimes.
Which is important, which is important. Now, my final question to
Yes.
you, Miss Young, what initiatives, if you can give us in a nutshell, what initiatives or programs exist currently to educate both workers and employers on their rights and responsibilities under CARICOM's free movement, and what more could be done to make integration seamless?
Well, there are a lot of initiatives that we have undertaken, programs just like this one, in terms of speaking on these and trying to set out what are the rights and obligations. We have certainly done that with businesses and with the Caribbean Congress of Labor. You have the Caribbean Congress of Labor, the Caribbean Employers Federation, and we have a good working relationship with them in terms of our Deputy Program Manager, Free Movement and Labor, and also in terms of them being included, those bodies being included in the meetings of the Council for Human and Social Development. We do also have the decision of the conference that has provided for the Caribbean Congress of Labor and the Caribbean CARICOM private sector organization to be associate institutions of the community and to be involved in discussions of the community on the CARICOM single market and economy. In terms of engagement with the stakeholders, in addition to involving in programs like these and in terms of universities and schools, we've done country missions. We've managed to do eight within the last 2 years that has involved consultations with all sectors of government and with labor unions, civil society, and employers as well, and private sector. We have done the videos that we did were some time ago, but those still explained the rights and obligations, and we've done a lot of outreach in that regard, and certainly we can do more. Even if we're small, we and those initiatives, as the CARICOM ambassador has done in Barbados, where he has participated extensively. I believe it's every week that ambassador may be on with the Morning Barbados program, explaining on CARICOM and CARICOM rights and obligation, member states' rights and obligations, and the rights and obligations of CARICOM nationals. And certainly we would continue to do that in terms of the initiatives that we have undertaken. And we are committed to continuing those, both in terms of the country missions, but also in terms of including partnerships with the Caribbean Congress of Labour and the Caribbean Employers Confederation to reach as many stakeholders as possible.
Well, thank you so much. I extend a huge thanks to all three of you. Your insight, your passion, as it comes out, is quite evident. And I must say thank you to you, our listener. You have been listening to today's Let's Talk Business with the BCCI, the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, as we looked at full free movement of CARICOM nationals, the opportunities and challenges for businesses in Barbados. I am Crystal J. Paul. Until next time, you take care.
That's it for another edition of Let's Talk Business with Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, BCCI. Join us again next time as we hear the perspectives of various subject matter experts and stay up to date on the challenges and solutions around emerging and current trends in business, policies, trade, and more.